Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Michel Platini has resigned as the president of UEFA, the Union of European Football Associations. Platini announced his resignation on Monday after the Court of Arbitration for Sport failed to cancel his ban from the sport. However, the court did reduce the length of the ban from 6 years to 4. Platini was accused of taking $2 million from FIFA, the international governing body of football. In the United States, the sport is called soccer. The court found he received suspect payment for working as an advisor to Sepp Blatter, who was then FIFA's president. Blatter resigned his position in 2015, while the organization was being investigated for corruption. The court said the payment was not linked to any kind of business agreement and was not part of Platini's wages. It noted that he received the payment 8 years after his work at FIFA ended. In a statement, Platini said, "The court's decision is inflicting on me a suspension whose length will de facto prevent me, as if by chance, from bidding for the next FIFA presidential election." He called the decision a profound injustice. He said he will consider asking a court in Switzerland to find him innocent. Platini has led UEFA since 2007. His term as president was set to end in March 2019. The next election for FIFA president is to take place in May 2019.
President Barack Obama will become the first sitting U.S. president to visit Hiroshima, Japan. The White House announced Tuesday the president will visit the city where an American warplane dropped an atomic bomb near the end of World War II. The visit is scheduled for May 27th. The president will not apologize for the world's first nuclear bombing, but will speak about the importance of limiting nuclear weapons, the White House said. Obama wants to highlight the devastating effects of war, said Benjamin Rhodes, Obama's deputy national security advisor. Rhodes made his comment in a blog posted on Medium.com. The nuclear bombing of Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, killed about 140,000 people. The U.S. dropped a second nuclear bomb on the Japanese city of Nagasaki 3 days later, killing as many as 80,000 people. U.S. President Harry Truman said he ordered the bombings to bring a quicker end to World War II. Japan announced its surrender to the United States and its allies on August 15, 1945. Obama's visit to Hiroshima will come toward the end of his 7-day trip to Japan. He is attending meetings of the G7, the leaders of the world's leading economies. Secretary of State John Kerry visited Hiroshima last month. "War must be the last resort, never the first choice," Kerry wrote in a memorial book at the Hiroshima World War II Memorial. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is scheduled to join Obama for his visit to Hiroshima. Rhodes said Obama and the Prime Minister will visit the Hiroshima Peace Memorial Park, which remembers victims of the atomic bombing. Keiko Ogura was 8 years old when Hiroshima was hit with a nuclear bomb. She survived and is now 79. "Before I die, I want to see the president, the sitting president's face," she told VOA. "That is not asking for an apology. No, just as a human being. You are here, and we are standing on the same land, the same level land, and then pray for the dead." Former President Jimmy Carter visited Hiroshima, but after he left office. Hiroshima Mayor Kazumi Matsui praised Obama's plan to visit as an important decision based on conscience. The mayor said he hopes the president will get to hear survivors' stories. Rhodes, the Obama advisor, wrote that the U.S. and its allies were fighting for a just cause in World War II against Japan and Germany. "The United States will be eternally proud of our civilian leaders and the men and women of our armed forces who served in World War II for their sacrifice at a time of maximum peril to our country and our world," Rhodes wrote. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The American car maker General Motors and Lyft Incorporated, a ride-sharing service, reportedly will start testing GM automobiles as driverless taxis. The Wall Street Journal says the companies could be offering service within a year. The newspaper said the tests will involve GM's electric-powered Chevrolet Bolt, but it did not say where the first test will take place. GM has reportedly invested $500 million in Lyft Inc. The partnership is seen as a way to compete against Uber, another ride-sharing company. GM also is planning to buy Cruise Automation Inc. for a reported $1 billion. The California-based company has been developing self-driving car technology for 2 years, the newspaper reported. The move is seen as a way for the automaker to sell the Bolt. It will be available later this year in a market for electric cars that the Journal described as soft. It is also seen as a way for GM to compete with U.S. technology companies interested in building driverless cars. Both Tesla Motors and Alphabet Inc. have been developing such vehicles for years. Alphabet is part of the U.S. technology company Google. Lyft reportedly is also developing driverless cars at its own research center in Pennsylvania. The company is preparing for autonomous vehicles in its fleet by 2020, the Wall Street Journal reported. It added that improvements in driverless cars are hurt by a patchwork of regulations that govern the use of autonomous vehicles and liabilities. The Wall Street Journal said Lyft will have drivers in the cars ready to intervene should something go wrong. I'm Brian Lynn. China sent fighter jets into the air on Tuesday after a U.S. Navy ship sailed close to a disputed area in the South China Sea. The U.S. Defense Department said the USS William P. Lawrence, a guided missile destroyer, traveled within 22 kilometers of Chinese-occupied Fiery Cross Reef. A Defense Department official said the Navy carried out the operation to, quote, challenge excessive maritime claims by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam. He accused them of seeking to restrict the movement of shipping and aircraft in the area. China's defense ministry said two fighter jets and three warships followed the U.S. ship, telling it to leave. Chinese officials denounced the U.S. action as an illegal threat to peace. They said it showed China's defensive positions in the area were necessary. China claims most of the South China Sea. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam also have claims to parts of the waterway. Tensions over the competing claims are expected to be discussed when U.S. President Barack Obama visits Vietnam later this month. His administration is currently re-examining the U.S. ban on arms shipments to the country. The arms embargo has been in effect for over 30 years. In 2014, the U.S. partially eased the embargo to enable shipments of materials only relating to maritime security. Now, the Obama administration is considering a total lifting of the arms ban as a sign of trust and developing ties between the two countries. Vietnam has long sought a complete removal of the ban. Such a step would signal a historic move away from a remaining remnant of Vietnam War-era hostility. The United States reestablished full diplomatic relations with Vietnam in 1995. The current ban on non-maritime lethal weapons shipments to Vietnam can be modified to reflect changing circumstances, according to U.S. official David McKeeby. He is a spokesman for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs. McKeeby told VOA that administration officials will closely consult with Congress on any proposed changes. He also said Vietnam's human rights record will be an essential element when making any policy decision. U.S. and Vietnamese officials are meeting this week to prepare for Obama's visit. The State Department said the U.S. officials are noting that Vietnam should make progress on human rights if it wants to improve ties. The department cited progress made by the Vietnamese government in some of its human rights practices. But it also pointed out violations and abuses, including political restrictions and arbitrary arrests and detentions. Murray Hebert is a Vietnam expert with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. There is currently quite a bit of discussion happening between the two sides, he said. Hebert added that Vietnam is cooperating with the United States on issues such as maritime security in the context of China's increasing assertiveness in the South China Sea. But even if the arms embargo is lifted, Hebert said, this does not mean Vietnam will actually be permitted to buy specific items. The United States could still reject individual arms transfer requests if there are serious human rights violations, he said. One Vietnamese official recently predicted there would be favorable conditions in the coming years that should allow the countries to increase defense cooperation. The comments by the deputy director of Vietnam's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Lai Thai Beng, were published in a report for the CSIS Pacific Forum. He added that Washington and Hanoi currently share strategic interests in handling the South China Sea. I'm Brian Lin.
The 2016 Invictus Games began this week in Orlando, Florida. The Games are a sports competition similar to the Olympics for former soldiers injured in combat. Britain's Prince Harry started the Games in 2014. He also served in the British military for 10 years. That time included 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan. At the end of his military service, he founded the Games. The first competition was in London. Harry said the Games serve as motivation for wounded soldiers working their way back to health. The Games take place over 5 days and include 10 competitions. Closing ceremonies are May 12th. 15 countries are sending athletes to the event. They include Great Britain, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Jordan, and Afghanistan. More than 500 athletes are attending. The athletes compete in events like archery, cycling, volleyball, driving, swimming, rugby, weightlifting, and indoor rowing. In a video message announcing the 2016 Games, Prince Harry said the first Games focused the recovery of hundreds of wounded servicemen and women through sport and inspired many hundreds more. In another video, Prince Harry says the goal is to use the Invictus Games as a way for wounded soldiers to get up off the sofa, dare themselves to do something, whether it's sport, whatever it is. William Reynolds is the captain of the team from the United States. He was injured by shrapnel from a bomb in Baghdad, Iraq, in 2004. Reynolds recovered well enough to return to duty, but had his left leg amputated in 2013. Reynolds competed in short running and longer cycling events at the Invictus Games in 2014, and is competing in the same events this year. In an interview with Fox Sports, he said competing at Invictus is a good goal for people recovering from war injuries. Getting ready for a competition provides purpose for people who may be tired of physical therapy. Adaptive sports helped me become an athlete again, Reynolds said. The name Invictus comes from a 19th century poem by English poet William Ernest Henley. It includes these lines: I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. In Latin, the word Invictus means unconquered. I'm Dan Friedel.
This is What's Trending Today. Former Facebook workers said this week that the social media company often avoided letting news popular among conservative Americans appear in its trending section. The former workers told the website Gizmodo that they were told to select stories to include in the trending list, even if those stories were not actually trending. The former workers also said that they were told not to include topics about Facebook itself into the trending list. One of the former workers told Gizmodo that the policies had a chilling effect on conservative news. Another accused Facebook of being biased in its selection of trending topics. The controversy did become the number one trending topic on Facebook for part of the day Monday. Many Facebook users were surprised that the company permitted the discussion to even appear in its trending section. The Associated Press reported Tuesday that a Facebook official said the company has found no evidence to support the former workers' claims. Tom Stocky, a company vice president, wrote in a Facebook post that the company does not permit political views to be suppressed. Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee chairperson has sent a letter to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. The chair, John Thune, is a Republican. In the letter, he asked Zuckerberg to respond to several questions about the company's alleged practice of suppressing conservative news. And that's What's Trending Today.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Ellie Hinkle, a professor at Seattle Pacific University, says that English learners need to learn to recognize patterns in the English language. These patterns, she says, are actually phrases, terms or expressions that relate to speaking and writing. So, what exactly are these phrases? Here is a real-life example. The author of this story sent an email requesting a time to speak with Hinkle. The email was similar to this one. Hi, Dr. Hinkle. My name is John Russell, and I work for the Learning English Division of Voice of America. Are you available for an interview sometime in the next 2 weeks? We're looking for advice from education experts, and your input would be greatly appreciated. Hinkle gave examples of important phrases in the email.
Hi, my name is something and something. I work for VOA. Are you available? We're looking for. You did not come and say, hey, I saw you speak. Give me an interview.
The important pattern-like phrases that she spoke about are the phrases, hi, my name is, I work for, are you available, and we're looking for. These expressions are considered polite ways, in American English, to introduce yourself or to ask another person for something. These phrases are socially acceptable and grammatically correct. Building a large set of socially acceptable and grammatically correct phrases can make the language learning process easier, says Hinkle. Anna Ulshamo also has studied learning strategies. She advises learners to look for patterns as they learn a language. Shamo calls this strategy finding and applying patterns. Ellie Hinkle says English academic writing, in particular, uses patterns more often than writing in other European languages.
So, French article is not, writing is not formulaic. German is not formulaic. In general, Central and Eastern Europeans don't do formulae. So, it's hardly formulaic in practically every way, not just the structure, but also the mode of expression.
Hinkle adds that English academic articles often begin with a statement of purpose and then use common patterns throughout. She gave an example of common and important phrases for introducing a topic and giving a summary in academic writing.
This paper will discuss X, Y, and Z. First, it will consider A, B, and C. Then it will also take a look at blah, blah, blah. And in conclusion, the paper will explain B, C, and D. So in general, these formulas are something that most learners don't notice.
The important phrases that learners don't often notice include the following. First, it will consider. Then it will take a look at. And in conclusion, the paper will explain. There are many other common phrases in academic writing. For example, you will often see statements such as, "I claim that," which is a common way to make an assertion, or, "One suggestion is that," which is a common phrase for making a recommendation. Future education stories will discuss more common phrases in academic writing. One common problem for English learners is that they often do their writing assignments without a clear goal in mind. For example, Hinkle says, when learners write personal narratives, they may choose their subject with little planning.
So they just simply say, all right, I'm going to write about my memory from childhood. And it was about my greatest grandfather in the world. And I loved him, and he's been long dead.
She adds that English learners can improve their writing by planning what they want to write.
So my second and third and fourth tip. Whatever it is that learners are writing, personal memory, scientific article, or a write-up of an interview like this one, follow the pattern. So that requires three things. First, identify similar genre. Second, analyze the stinking thing to death until you can identify this pattern and then follow the yellow brick road.
In other words, learners should choose stories, identify patterns in the stories, and then use the patterns that they find in their own writing. So, try to find patterns the next time you read a story on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Then try to use the patterns that you find. Remember, you should not copy a paper line by line. Copying a paper is considered plagiarism, and plagiarism is unacceptable in English-speaking academic work. However, you should look for examples of pattern-like phrases in the stories. Then, try to include the phrases in your writing or speaking. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.